We good?
Yep.
Okay.
Thank you. Oh wow, you can just see it. Well, that'll be easy to find. We found for the next 50 miles south of here is just up at the edge of tight water, just above that, whether it's Allegheny or the edge of one of the sloughs, South Slough, or it's looking like even Mill Creek. That's where the Indians settled, and the mouths of creeks too. But those sloughs.
Now, right in here, here for the next few hundred feet, it's flat ground that is where the buildings and the mill had to be.
Ah.
I mean, there's no one spot. Now, if you go another few hundred feet here, on the right-hand side, there used to be a big crabapple tree. Oh. I don't know if it's still there or not. But the trees that are here now are all ones that we planted.
So that's a plantation out there?
It's a plantation.
Okay. Or there was about 40?
It was a big blackberry patch. So we turned the blackberry patch into a plantation. It's just part of the, see, we acquired all the private land in the whole canyon here. And we did it because we wanted to be responsible for the whole thing. And then instead of being blamed if someone did something.
Do you think, in retrospect, was that a good move?
I think it was. We tried to maintain good public relations with our neighbors.
There's lots of flat area over there, too.
Oh, on the other side. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But it's not
one. Oh, look at right down there. It looks like there's an incline coming down just on the other side. The blackberries went up to
that. We built a road there. It's one of our haul roads. There's a switchback, and we're clearing the top of the ridge.
Now, there's an old roadway on the other side there.
Yeah, that's what it is. That's a haul road.
Oh, okay.
It might be gated.
Uh-huh.
Not positive.
Is that BLM over there?
No, it's
state.
It's LA Forest. Uh-huh. See, we acquired all the private land here.
Uh-huh. Except for this little chunk of street in front of us is private.
Uh-huh. Yeah, to the left, there is a little teeny strip of BLM.
Ah, that's BLM. Okay, we're right on time.
Perfect.
And there's also some pilings under this bridge.
Uh-huh. Old ones? Well, it seems like since they were running ships and things, that would be a docking place, a pretty logical one.
Gary thought it might have been part of the old mill.
The thing back here that always blows my mind is in my source book there, it says this guy who was occupying this ground, had his mill there, and his shipbuilding yard. They were down in San Francisco, and they didn't like the whole country down there, so they wanted to look for a better place than all that country, and they sailed up Umpqua and chose this. I thought, now, that's kind of hard to believe.
All right.
In the whole Sacramento Delta, there's no place to look good to them, so they can't appear.
Yeah. We're going to go by Luder Creek and Charlotte.
That's right.
And you thought that Charlotte Creek had some kind of association with Indians as well.
Well, I think it did, and probably, I'm not sure about Luder Creek. Luder Creek's kind of a canyon.
That sounds more like a German guy.
But I think Charlotte Creek and Indian Charlotte Creek, well, both of those, probably have an Indian.
Uh-huh. But what's the reason you think that?
Well, Indian Charlie Creek, I think, because when I came to work here, that's 65 years ago, so it's a long time, but local people said there was an Indian cemetery up there.
Uh-huh.
On Indian Charlie Creek. But a Jeppo Logger moved in there in 1951 and had a little piece of private land there, had a landing, and probably wrecked whatever there was in the Indian cemetery, if there ever was one there.
And for a couple miles.
And Charlotte Creek, because there's quite a little bit of flat land right there.
Luder Creek does it have any tidal action? I've only stopped by there a couple of times and it's been pretty dry.
I kind of doubt that it does.
Okay. It looks like just like almost a seasonal drainage.
I see all this on the right hand side would have been part of that Charlotte Creek. If it's Indian allotment or whatever it was.
On the right here.
I'm just saying, this would have connected with the claim would have been in the mouth of Charlotte Creek, to the left.
Uh-huh. So that whole flat right through there, that's all natural.
It is.
Wow.
And I think
that
part
I see what you're saying.
The Charlotte Creek would have been a land claim right here. So I think it probably has Indian background.
It would seem like it. Sure looks like the topography would sure fit.
Yeah.
That's why I was curious about the name. There's still a lot of Johnsons in the Siletz area. Would that be the same?
Are there?
Same family?
Well, it sure might be.
Yeah, there's.
That's a very common North American name.
Yeah.
More commonly, yes, the Smith.
Oh, wow.
But to have an Indian named Johnson is less common. And then to have a relative with the same name would be. But that Charlotte Creek area there, that looks like it really could have been a village site, or at least
yeah,
a.
Sure does to me.
Yeah.
What Indians seem to do, African Americans too, they would just adopt a name that they kind of liked that was available. My kinfolks came through Maryland in 1660 or something like that, and they had 12 black slaves on their property list. Then they died, and they got their freedom in Maryland when they turned age 31. So they just adopted the name of the family they were living with and carried on.
Transcribe.
Yeah,
you usually have more on the dot when I'm recording somebody, but we've had a lot of times here where we're like traveling through our things and Jerry's kind of reminiscing about stuff, so that'll be fun to see what that turns out. I think we got a lot of good stuff on the tape though, so
yeah,
and some nice photos and a great map.
Some good points.
Jerry, can you hand me that oral history for Marv Riley? I'm going to give it right back.
Oh, yeah.
It's yours to keep. I just wanted to throw Amber or something on
thank
it.
Thank you for that, too.
Oh, you bet.
Again.
Is this your way?
That's what we ended up doing with that. That's all done with AutoCAD, though. With ArcInfo, we put those in layers on ArcInfo, and that's how we did a cultural resource inventory at the school for us. That's just the part that Marv Riley did, though, but him and Jerry went to school together, and we're pretty close going to school, and Marv just died. He was 90 just a short while ago, and both the dean and the head of the school for us both went into it cold 2 years ago and said the main thing that they learned from was this oral history. So it took, 20 years to be worth anything, but that's the the map with the cultural resources and then the eyewitness account. Makes pretty powerful information. Puts together a lot of information you can't get any other way. About 15 of those for the OSU Research Forest and then turned it into my master's.
Mm-hmm. That's very nice.
That's the other thing is
that map's pretty.
Indexing.
What's yeah. So that's a pretty simple map. The Elliott's really big, so it gets cluttered quickly.
Yeah, I think that's 15,000 acres, that map, that it just showed you, so that's like, that's one reason we're having trouble getting the Elliott on the recent scale. Jerry, are you familiar with this report?
No, I'm not.
That should show some E.K. Woods logging on it, I would think.
I would think so. Data 45, it'd be close.
Yeah. I inherited a bunch of those about 25 years ago. I've given most of them to the archives, but the ones that, like today, that I'm still using, I'm holding back on.
Wow, that's
pretty. Got all the names of all the wildfires and all the different types of land. All the state private land.
From what year?
1945. So that's right when logging started here. That's why it was raining. And I thought Jerry might be familiar with that data. My interest in this is to get not only the oral histories together, but all the background data, the GLO surveys and the vegetation, the aerial photos. It's a lot of work putting that all together so and assign it to students.
Yeah.
So they can learn how to do it and gain some insights. There's two big herds out here earlier today. They look to be about 50 animals each. That's the most I've seen out here.
There's all the cows one place, all bulls another place.
Well, yeah, there's one bull right there, but
maybe a couple.
Two herds of cows, and then the bulls were all together.
And they know there's like
10 or 12 of them.
There's like 145 of them all together.
Is that what there is?
They got them all counted.
Well, I saw over 100 of them today going by, so that's the most I've noticed.
Well, they got a regular harvest plan there. They wrote all the hay, and they cut the hay, they burn the fields, fertilize the ground again. And that was in one of these Indian allotments.
This was here too?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
The elk pasture. Uh-huh. Yeah, the guy who owned that came to me one day and he said, I want you guys to take over this. I'm gonna have a land trade with you, and you can have this and give me some good state timber somewhere.
Yeah.
I said, well, we do a lot of those trades, thousands and thousands of acres, but we don't want this right here. Our job is to grow wood, the state school fund. It's hard to grow wood out in this pasture out here. I said, well, I said, what you ought to do is go down to the BLM office and say the same thing to them. They got 240s over here that are isolated, and offer to take those over. They don't especially care about those, and take. That's exactly what they did. He said, I'm kind of scared to talk. He said, come down with me, talk to him. Okay, I will. That's exactly what happened. So, say it's a BLM pasture.
Almost all the consolidation here is done under your watch, wasn't it? As far as trades and acquisitions?
For 21 years.
One thing I keep forgetting to ask about is the isolated parcels that they sold 2 or 3 years ago. Are you familiar with those?
I know where they are. And they still today can't turn a wheel out there. Yeah, the world of bureaucracy is a terrible, terrible thing. Knowing Roseburg Lumber, they're not going to give up anytime soon. And neither is, Eugene there.
Kathy Seneca.
Those are the parcels that sold. I appreciate what she said after she bought that ground. She said, "We don't need those logs. We have plenty of logs. We don't need that land. We have plenty of land." She said, "But it's the principle of the thing. Talking about a principle here." They may never touch that ground on Dee's Creek back there. But she's standing up for principle. I appreciate that very much.
So they're keeping it on the principle.
That's right.
But they haven't followed up on it, though, I don't think.
No, I don't think they plan to right away either.
Just kidding. I thought you might be familiar with that report. I didn't know if you had one or generated.
No, I've never seen anything like this.
Yeah. A guy named Tanner was the secretary of the East Lane County Fire District, or whatever it was, from the 30s to about 1952 or 53. And he had all kinds of personal correspondence with the governor and everything else, and he kept excellent records. And then when he died or retired, they threw all his stuff in a dumpster. And then a guy named John McQuaid went in and snatched it back.
I knew John.
Yeah, and about 30 years later, he gave it to me because he didn't know what to do with it. So I've been putting it into archives and scanning it, putting it online. And
John had a good map, too, that he gave to State Forestry.
The map, I have the 1914 map, McQuaid got that to me, and I took it to the state, and the state digitized it and turned it into GIS.
Yeah, that's right.
So it took him about 2 years, but that was a real score on McQuaid's part.
Yes, it was.
Also gave him the 1885 Coos Bay Quadrangle. And they digitized that, but they had prisoners doing it. What I liked about that is they list all the timber buyers. So I was saying names of people that I know, and you'll see names of people you know in there that...
I've already seen them here.
Yeah.
One thing I like here is showing you how that stuff was handled by horse or tractor.
Yeah. No helicopter logging.
Or gas.
It's a detailed, thorough report.
That really is. I've only seen one patch of horse logging ever. Huh. And that was up at a place called Black Rock. Huh. Out of Dallas, somewhere up there. Got to visit there, and oh yeah, there was, I forgot the guy's name, there he was with his team of horses pulling out this, looks like maybe like 40-year-old wood on easy ground, of course. We all envy him his easy ground.
There's a guy that was doing horse logging out of burnt woods. In just small parcels. I think one of the units that my crews cut, I think he might have logged that. But it was pretty much a lifestyle, not a moneymaker.
Yeah.
How come they have Schoolfield Creek misspelled on the sign up here?
That's been debated when we first made our maps on the State Forest.
Yeah.
back in 1955, we talked to a lot of people locally, and they all disagreed. Should there be an L or not?
Yeah.
To have an L or not?
On the other side of town, they got the L. This side of town, they don't. But the original name's got an L in it.
Well, names are funny that way. A lot of our names, our own names we carry, have been spelled differently in the past. My kinfolks came from Denmark, and their name was Thompson. Of course, the way the Danes spell Thompson is Thomsen. But after my grandpa had been here for, well, my grandma and my grandpa both, when they married each other, their names were both Thompson over in Denmark. But they eventually gave in and changed the spelling to Thompson, the anglicized spelling. During World War I, there were hundreds of German-American families that changed their name from a German spelling to an anglicized word.
Or the pronunciation. In my family, they changed the pronunciation and kept the spelling the same.
One of the folks in our state forestry family was Dan Schultz. Worked out of Roseburg over there. And he spelled it Schultz. Which was very anglicized.
That's only changing an S for a Z, isn't it?
Well, and leaving out the C, I'm sure it's spelled Schultz.
Oh, they spelled it without a C in it, too.
Yeah. And I don't know what year it may have been, what years. It was back in the Middle Ages, people started having middle names. My grandparents did not have middle names. Nor did my mother.
I don't think any of my all four grandparents, I don't think none of them had a middle name.
Now, I guess in England, a lot of people have three or four names.
Yeah, they do. I think that's where that comes from, is Britain.
And today, there's quite a few women who don't want to change their name when they get married. So they either keep their maiden name or they incorporate the two. One lady said one time, well, she liked your name. She didn't want to change it. I understand that.
Jerry, Dean Mountain is visible from 101 here, isn't it? Wasn't that
I
part of the visual?
I've never seen a place where it was, but I don't know a place.
Okay.
You see the coast, see the ocean,
yeah.
And maybe the beach.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think anywhere in here, anyway.
They had those visual rules where they started at Luter Creek, where it was visible from the highway. But weren't there a stretch or so along 101 where part of the forest was visible, where they were keeping it for appearance?
That could be.
The If you want to borrow that report, you're welcome. The other two you can keep, but that one you can just borrow. I've got a little bit marked up towards the end of mostly Lincoln County stuff, I think. Or maybe Benton County.
Well, this is Douglas here.
Well, it's got the whole state. It's only certain parts of it that I marked up that I happened to have been studying at the time. Now, was it Winchester Bay? Wasn't there a fairly large Indian town or village from here as well?
I don't know if there was. There was a logging railroad came out right here.
Uh-huh.
The picture of it crossing the highway.
Uh-huh.
In fact, when we moved here, that was still there, the trestle across the highway with a train on it.
It seemed like Winchester Bay, 10 Mile, Allegheny.
Well, those are lots of places.
Those are all like pre-European type.
I think so.
And all connected. They said they could take a canoe from 10 Mile down to Coos Bay.
See, I believe that.
By going along lakes.
I heard that story first from N.A. Peterson, who lived up behind 10 Mile Lakes.
Uh-huh.
That's the story he told me, is it? Absolutely. Until the fire of 1868,
that was
navigable by canoe all that way.
They just had a few portages in it.
That's right.
Probably, that came out of Don Werrat's book, and then his daughter, I know her pretty good. She's done ethnobotany through this area for the tribe. But her dad was mostly a historian, and then she's a linguist.
I knew him a little bit. He and I served together on the Historical Museum Board.
Uh-huh. Well, he became pretty knowledgeable. I don't think he had any academic training or anything. I think he's like a carpenter or something.
That's right.
But he just got very interested in his ancestral history and became an expert at it.
So he really knew what the whole story of the battle between the Coos and the Coquels.
Uh-huh.
You know, how that, of course, originally, it was probably the same tribe. But then, things happened within the tribe. And one part of it got reorganized and accepted by the federal government as being, that was the Coquels, as being a tribe again. Oh, and then the bad feeling started right there.
Yeah.
That guy, his name was Anderson. He was a very astute individual. With a little money, I'm sure she has some BIA money probably, and Lee Iacocca, more than pretty soon they had a retirement home abandoned, they had organic cranberry bogs, they had 1,000 acres of timberland, they had 6,000 acres of BLM land, they had the Weyerhaeuser mill site, and the Weyerhaeuser office, all because of Anderson's pushing. And then they fired him.
Did you know George Wasson?
You know, I just know the name.
Oh, okay.
And he had I think it was an aunt or someone who was a nurse at the hospital.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, I co-authored a report with George Wasson, Jr., but he was kind of alienated from the tribe. I think he's gay and
he
lived over Eugene and and he got a PhD and just made himself part of the college there. But he really concentrated on his heritage too, because his dad was the one that went back to D.C. and fought for tribal rights in the 1930s.
Okay.
And was the one that got the tribes reinstated.
Ah.
But I don't think he would have known him, Senior.
No.
Wasn't Senior. And then Lottie, I think think his sister or daughter, tribal oral historian.
Then they got a street named for an empire, didn't it?
Wasson Street.
Yep.
They had a burial at the end of South Slough, right above Tidewater.
When I came to work here, there was a sawmill there and a schoolhouse, the same place.
Wow, at the end of South Slough?
Exactly, right there.
Yeah, that's the old Wasson homestead. There had an orchard in there, and I think the old house is still there, maybe, with a burial, family burial there too. You said Don Ivy went to school with your children, didn't you?
With my daughter.
Yeah.
They were class of 69.
Yeah, he's the first cousin of George Wasson Jr.
I like Don very much.
Yeah, he's a good guy.
He's a gentleman.
Yeah.